Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Don Studi reportedly had a documented history of violence, domestic abuse, threats to kill family members, a property so dangerous that law enforcement allegedly treated every call there as a two-officer minimum. Got to go to Studi's, bring another guy. How does a man with that kind of known profile allegedly go an entire lifetime without anyone pulling the thread on what else he might be doing? We talked about it last week. We heard Bob's MacGyver stories. I was going to create Bob as MacGyver in AI, but never got around to it this week. But he's joining us again. And we're going to get into some of your questions, some of your thoughts on this case. If you've not seen the doc, it is out right now. The Green, My Killer Father, Green Hollow Killer, available right now. Is that Peacock or is it Paramount Plus?
Paramount Plus.
Okay, yeah. Great. I couldn't think of it earlier this morning. Bob is with us fresh off of Jazz Fest in New Orleans. He was performing with his band Bob and the Shakemakers. I heard you had a rousing performance the other night. How did it all go?
I always burn it down, but I'll tell you this. I played through, meaning that it's a tradition every Jazz Fest. It's actually our friend's band, the Nth Power, plays at the Blue Nile in New Orleans, and it's the last show. So the fest itself proper ends on Sunday, and then Monday night, the Nth Power always plays like 3.5 hours. It's epic. Mm-hmm. It's church. It's amazing. But that doesn't start till 11. So I had a 7 a.m. flight. So that show ended just shy of 3. So
a.m.?
3 a.m., Tony.
Yeah, it's about 5 hours ago.
That doesn't work for me.
Right. No. So I played through. There was no sleeping. We had staged our bags at our friend's place and then got out in the Uber and drove to the airport. And I got on a plane, and 30 seconds after I sat in the seat, I was out. So
you got some raw Bob today.
Oh, man. Yeah. But it was great. I love Jazz Fest. Is an amazing thing. We've been doing it for decade plus. So it's our favorite thing.
I'm glad you made it, and the flights were on time, because I know we were worried about that, but you're here. Yep. So let's talk Don Studi.
Probably cost you $5,000 in airfare though, because of the gas prices.
Well, in like Spirit just quit overnight. So it's like I kept running into people who would.
And I'm sorry, last digression on that. One of the podcasts I was supposed to be on tomorrow, another show, she had to cancel because she originally was coming back on a flight on Spirit, and she's like, getting rebooked on Frontier. And I'm like, man, I still don't think you're going to make it.
That right, one exactly. Closes the next day.
That's a real lateral move from Frontier to Spirit to Frontier. That's bad stuff.
It really is.
I did have the opportunity on the flight there. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. You've diverged yourself into the story. I mean, obviously you've lived it. You've been there. You know the story well, but now you've seen the doc itself. I'm going to start here. Lucy, in the doc, if you've not watched it, please go check it out. Lucy says she was a child when she allegedly witnessed her father disposing of bodies. This is kind of the crux of the whole damn thing. Her memory of dad and her having father-daughter bonding time, carrying bags of lye to the well, dad dumping bodies down, and then everybody having a grand old time. She's been telling this story since 2007, and the estimated number of alleged victims it has shifted over the years. Anywhere from a handful, now it's like, what, 50 to 70 is where she's kind of sitting at it. How much of those inconsistencies in this story really matter when you're talking about a kid trying to process something that horrific versus the parts of her story that have stayed locked in for nearly two decades? What's your take on the crux of the story, the 50 to 70 bodies that she's talking about? And then you also have the ex-wives, which certainly is questionable at best, if not far worse than it actually is. The core of the story, Bob, you know her, you've talked to her, you became friends with her, hundreds of hours of conversation. Now that you've seen it and you've seen this whole dynamic play out on screen, where does it leave you?
Kind of in the same place. You know, when I got involved with her early on, I believed her, you know. Mm-hmm. She was so adamant. Mm-hmm. in her really, her drive, her motivating drive for it really seemed to be genuine to me. And like I said, you know, when I initially started speaking with her, what my main thing was to try to sniff out those inconsistencies, try to see if I could detect any kind of red flags in terms of her not being an honest person or this being some kind of, you know, scam in some way where she's trying to get a payday at the block. And everybody that I spoke to that knew her or knew of her feels the same way, that she's telling the truth. And it was like, it was interesting to me to watch the doc because I had never seen the two women together. Mm-hmm. Talking about Lucy,
her sister.
And sister Susan.
Yeah.
So to have that scene at the end where, you know, not to give you spoilers out there, but where they meet up and confront one another was really fascinating to me in a lot of different ways. And we talked about it last week during our episodes that we did on this, in terms of, I think we all agree, they have definitely collectively suffered trauma. Now, what that trauma is hard to know. But Tony, to your question exactly, I just think that I honestly still believe she's telling the truth. I have every intention on going back and trying to find those bodies. Like mm-hmm. that's how much I believe that this is a real thing. Now, the number fluctuates, like I said last week. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched that, you should go back and watch it. But, you know, I asked her the same thing. I'm like, where'd you come up with these numbers? Mm-hmm. You know, because, like you said, T, you can't really kind of put too much weight to what a young, you know, first, second, third grader's remembering 40 plus years back.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like you just can't give it that much weight because you realize, you know, your memories are all just memories that are based on the last thing that you remembered. So the last time you remember a memory from 40 years ago, it's going to be bastardized in whatever form or fashion that's happened over the past 40 years. That's how our memory works. You're not actually remembering the thing itself. You're remembering mm-hmm. you remembering it over and over and over, or whatever variations of that exist, or that your mind has filled in the gaps. That's what consists of our memory now. So, you know, and I think that was evident that they couldn't locate the wells, mm-hmm. you know, because if we ever do another thing on this, I'm going to send you one of my clips ahead of time. And it was the first time we were down, when we had the ground penetrating radar guy out there, and it was a different guy than was in the dock. This was the first mm-hmm. time we were out, and we think that we locate the well, you know, because GPR isn't like, you know, you're not seeing what's underneath the surface, you know, but mm-hmm. you're just seeing anomalies
right.
in the soil, you know. So, and we found this cylinder. It looked to be a cylinder, and it went.
Sure.
Because I think that particular GPR could only get down about 20 feet. Mm-hmm. You know, and these wells were, because you wouldn't be finding any bodies that high up, you know, most of the wells, according to Sean Smith, who you guys would have, if you've watched the doc, you saw him in there. So I had befriended Sean when there was kind of this war between Lucy and Sean, and you could see that developing on screen, mm-hmm. you know, where she's right. talking shit and she's like that thing, you know, my dad always said never trust a Smith, and, you know, she's running around saying that their family were weed dealers and, you know, these are just...
Yeah. She's losing her shit, losing her credibility.
She's losing her shit, man. Like, so, and it's that kind of shit that would always rub me the wrong way with her in terms of, like, is she legit? Like, I mean, I fall on the side of I really do believe her because it's just, it would be the longest con of all time for her to be, because it's like that number 2007 comes out, but it's way before that.
Yeah,
it's way before that. She was, if 2007 would have been like, I would have been like, it's, you know, at the time it would have been less than 20 years. You know what I'm saying? And I knew that she had been making outcries when she was a child. And then she tells the story about how her father would come and pick her up for school. So I don't know where that 2007 came from, because I think they said it in the doc too.
They did. I don't know if it's like the first where it's documented somewhere where we can look back and go, here's factually what we can look at. And I agree. I mean, when I look at this case, and Robin, I'm curious to get your take on her behaviorally. When I look at her, excuse me, I believe she believes what she's saying. I don't think she's trying to scam anybody. I don't think this is like some sort of long game. I don't think there's any other thing other than she's trying to get people to be aware and tell the version of reality that she believes is real.
Yeah.
I guess my question is her version of reality truly real? And that I don't know the answer to, but I believe she believes it. And that's important because we see a lot of cases where there is a long game scam going on. It is for attention. It's narcissistic. It's just that I don't get any of that with her. Robin, what's your take on her now that you've seen it and seen her behavior demonstrated?
Yeah, so her behavior, I think, is what I'd expect from someone who's suffering trauma, you know, experiences and coming up with her numbers. But what I found really compelling and really corroborating is all the data points doc team did, irrespective of her. So the one guy that actually admitted to his own detriment of carrying a body. And then you actually had the sister of him saying, you know, that she gets released from jail, that, you know, all the horrible things. And she actually hates her niece. So the all these data points give you the arc of Ducey. Is that the name, Ducey?
Lucy Studi.
Lucy Studi.
You combined them both. You made Lucy Studi into Stussy.
Right.
It's also the newest dish on the buffet at Golden Corral's near you. Try it. So, it's delicious.
So that
cornflakes on top.
So when you look at all the data, when you look at all the data points coming in, it's completely conceivable that that guy would do that. Now, the thing that I think is up for challenge is the numbers. But you can't put out the realm of possibility, but I would wager, I'm with you, Bob, I would wager you would at least find one handful numbers-wise of people buried somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be in the same location because it was easy, it's a habit. He looked like, you know, as the one guy was describing, how he was so casual carrying this body, he knew exactly where he's going, knew exactly what he's doing, it wasn't a big deal. Kind of like Porch Guy in the Guthrie case. He's had some reps doing this. And if he had been nervous because it was his first time and asking some local dude, hey, you want to make $100 or help me carry a body? I mean, just the fluidity of his actions says this wasn't his first rodeo doing it. So I don't know if there's 50 or 70 bodies, but I would definitely wager there's a couple.
I want to talk about the bodies. Okay, there's almost like two lanes here. There's the ex-wives, which
I believe he killed them.
I think that's, to me, that's pretty clear cut. But the 50 to 70 or however many there are of the women that he's alleged to have targeted, vulnerable women at bus stops, women passing through truck stops, women who reportedly had nowhere else to go. The vulnerable, I mean, it reminds me of Gilgo, reminds me of Heuermann to a certain extent. But with Heuermann, there were receipts to a certain extent. There's people looking for their missing loved ones.
Right.
And that was, you know, a lot of women. You got 50 to 70 here. We don't really see that connection here. But again, we are talking about women that society, that families, that people kind of threw away, that they stopped caring about. So it's not impossible for me to think that, well, your odds of people actually raising a hand and saying, oh, so-and-so is missing, not impossible that this couldn't be going on here.
Yeah.
But it does lower it, that there's nobody, that none of this is connecting in terms of dots of women missing in the general area. I mean, you would think there'd be at least, you know, somewhat of a track number here if we're talking 50 to 70 that have gone missing in that general area. We don't have that.
Right.
I'm sorry, Bob, but I agree. It's that incongruency of the numbers that she's claiming and the lack of missing person reports for that number. In other words, there'd be some leakage of families saying, where the hell? Because that's the question of Bob on this is like, so, you know, what's the intent? What can you do when there's no reports like that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hijack the question.
No, not at all, man. We always want to hear from you, man. I mean, from my perspective, when I first got involved with the case, you know, I have a bunch of what I call diggers that work with me who are just unbelievable on the internet and, you know, unbelievable on NamUs and will, you know, and I'm like, look, I'm going to give you a range from, I'm going to say, let's go back to 70, mm-hmm. you know, and I want you to work forward and see if you can start finding people either from Council Bluff and or Omaha that went missing and, you know, of the female variety, you know, and not even relating to sex workers. But, you know, I'm thinking at that point, if I could start pulling some names and I got some names. Like there were definitely some women that went missing back in that time frame. You know, in terms of who reported and, you know, because that was like the thing with Gacy too, where it was kind of a misnomer where people thought that these kids weren't reported missing and that's how he flew under the radar all that time. And that's just simply not true. I mean, mm-hmm. you see so many devastated families in the Gacy thing, man, that it's like, it's clear that even kids that had kind of lost their way and were out, you know, kind of hustling and kind of street urchins at that time in their life still had loved ones that were looking for them. So I knew that it's kind of a, like a false flag a bit to think that people that are you know, doing sex work for a living don't have people that love them and care about them. And Starl, you know, that person vanishes off the face of the earth, even if their family's not happy with where their life is right now, they're certainly going to follow up with it. So
yeah,
I found that part of it to be true. Did I find the kind of numbers that you would expect to find based on that claim? Not necessarily. But that doesn't mean that it didn't happen, because the other thing that I had heard, and I can't remember if I brought this up last week, was that Don Studi was like a low level drug dealer / gun runner, and that he had kind of made his way into the lower ranks of the Kansas City Mafia, mm-hmm. and that the word had spread that he had like an excellent dumping ground for them to mm-hmm. get rid of the people that they had to get rid of as part of their business. And I mean, that tracked with me heavily. And that one, that because sense. Yeah, like this story wasn't in the doc, which I don't know why, because it's one of the stories that Lucy like constantly told. And it was one of the last homicides that she recalls. And it was, she was in the trailer. Her father was in the trailer with her. Somebody came and either honked, they pulled up outside, you know, up that long drive into the hollow, and somebody either honked or knocked on the door, and her father said, just wait here, you know, I got to go out and talk to this guy. So at that point, her dad's out there for a while. She hears some yelling. She sees her dad get in the car, and she says that she watched her father kill the guy. And so that ends up being this car that was buried on their property. So again, when you're looking on the Smith property where much of the dig took place, you know, in terms of the wells, that's on the Smith property, and the Studi property is on the other side. So where her trailer was, there was kind of another ravine, and she kept telling us that there's a car buried there, that that last guy that he killed, Don Studi, that he ended up just pulling the car into that ravine and then burying it there, the full car with the guy in it. So when we did the first kind of LIDAR run, and I'm like, and that was the first time that Paul, the documentary maker, was there. And we had been doing the mushroom trail and the place where we thought that we found that her well, the dry well. And I'm like, well, we still have about 2 hours of daylight, and we've, you know, you've paid this LIDAR guy to be here all day. I'm like, why don't we just go ahead and check that area where she's claiming this car? I mean, that's going to be the easiest dig of them all, you know? And so I'm asking Paul and Lucy, I'm like, why aren't we going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that makes the most sense. We're not trying to find a needle in a haystack in terms of a well that's been, you know, filled in 30, 40 years ago. I mean, we're talking about, she knows the location where that vehicle would be. And we're going to see that anomaly.
That right? would have been picked up by the LIDAR, definitely.
Yeah.
100%. You know, and so she tells me as we're walking back, because we had a group of us, there were about 8 or 10 of us that were out there that day. And, you know, and I'm not very shy about things like that, you know. And I'm like, hey, you know, like, why aren't we bringing the LIDAR to, like, to go scan that area? Like, I don't understand why we're not doing it. That kind of, and she ended up putting it on Paul, saying that Paul didn't really want to, like, kind of deal with that aspect of it, because it, which there's, I guess there's some legitimacy to it, because when you're in a deal like that as a documentary filmmaker, you have to get a location agreement, meaning that you have to get the landowner to agree for liability's sake, sure, to allow for the digging to happen. Mm-hmm. And Paul's thing was that I didn't get any kind of clearance to go ahead and dig down there on that property. And the whole, like, there's so much that they didn't tell in the doc, but that's not Paul's fault. They gave him 3 episodes and he's trying to fit a ton of shit in there in the 45 minute app. So, you know, but the concept was that Don Studi had given his land, went into a trust, and that it was, I think, a cousin had taken control of the trust. And the cousin was thought to be much like Don in character, and wasn't going to be playing nice, and was really going to be protecting the secret, is the way that Lucy had always told me, in terms of trying to get in communication with him in order to be able to search on that land. Because, like I said, when I got out there the first time, and I was up on the opposite side of the fence line, and I knew I had the dog hits right there. Like, it took everything in my, like, all of my willpower to not go buy a shovel at Walmart and just start digging, man. Like, up in that area, because those would have been shallow graves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was just like,
You need just a little tendril of credibility here. And everyone does, I think, in this case, to go, okay, she said this is going to be there. We found it. That makes us think there might be more here. Not just a lot of digging and there's nothing. That doesn't lead to a whole lot of credibility. Not to say that she's lying or anything like that, but just something to grasp onto. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on this so far in Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. In December of 2022, the FBI, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, and the Fremont County Sheriff's Office went to Green Hollow to search for the remains of women allegedly killed by Donald Studi. Cadaver dogs reportedly alerted at multiple locations across the property. Agencies drilled into what they thought might be the well, spent parts of 3 days on site and found nothing, and then closed the case. Lucy Studi has said, oh, they searched the wrong well. A private forensic dig in 2025 using some ground-penetrating radar and cadaver dogs and allegedly got more hits in areas that never have been fully searched. Bob's been talking about some of that. Bob, I want to ask you about, this is kind of theoretical, but is there anybody out there, could there be a reason today that somebody doesn't want anybody digging in certain areas? Is there a mole in some of this that's leading people this way and not that way when maybe they should be looking more that way? Is there anything prohibiting them from going and looking in the areas where Lucy says that the well is? Or is Lucy going to keep saying every time they dig and they find nothing, oh, it's the wrong spot? What are your thoughts on that? Could there be still some reason that somebody has to not discover what might be the well?
I don't smell any kind of like cover up in terms of law enforcement. Much like Robin was talking about when we were talking about this case last week.
Yeah.
The feds aren't in the business of finding bodies. Mm-hmm. There's nobody at the end of the rainbow to arrest and convict. You know, that's not what their deal is. That's not what they get into, man. They're not going to waste the time and the resources just trying to recover missing persons based on this type of story. Not at length, at least, because, you know, if they don't have anybody to arrest and ultimately convict, it's not something that's going to pull them in. And I'm sure Robin will agree with that. And that's really what happened here. And what we had was this kind of internal power struggle between Astrup, who was the sheriff down there, and the feds when they came in. And like I was saying, essentially what they had the sheriffs and the deputies doing was just kind of standing guard. Like they were not allowing them to do any of the actual searching for any of the bodies in terms of the core samples that they were doing. So these guys weren't really in the loop and they were only being told what they were being told, you know, by the feds. Cause I knew that there weren't really guys down with them. And that was based on multiple conversations that I ended up having after the fact with local deputies. And, you know, so I don't think so. I don't think that there was at least in the sense, like your typical sense of an accomplice, I don't think that he had help. Like, I don't think he was working with anybody, you know.
If we go to the Casey mob route, though, I mean, there might be some reason there. You don't want anybody, these people dug up or identified or anything. I'm not even thinking law enforcement, like trying to cover anything. I'm thinking more like if there is a mob connection, is that still there? I mean, is there somebody somewhere? It's like, oh, you dig. Maybe you don't want to dig over there. Maybe suggest this. You know, maybe we don't. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. But I would have to think that if that generation of the Kansas City mob were still alive and well and worried about it, that the easiest way to end that would be to shut Lucy up. You know what I mean?
Good point. Yes.
If Lucy goes away, then there's not going to really be any more talk about it because Susan clearly isn't going to be chasing it.
Sure.
Right.
That's a good point.
So what do you make about the wobble, and I call these things wobbles, of law enforcement's ruling of suicides? Again, when I'm looking at the arc of everyone's behavior throughout the documentary, which is a small snapshot, I know there's much more going on.
And let's call it S words.
Unaliving. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry. So I found law enforcement's challenge with being fully transparent a bit of a wobble,
Unaliving or S word.
Especially when the unaliving circumstances were. I mean, one of them, you can just stand up and you won't be unalived, you know, in the closet. So did you find any, I mean, what was your take from that? Because again, where there's a little, because again, it was I wouldn't call it smoke necessarily, but I'd call it a little puff. It was just odd that those were ruled unaliving events surrounding this entire, and all these things around him, the bad guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I thought that from the beginning. And I kind of knew, because when I was talking to Paul Lima, who, again, he didn't do the directing, but he was the producer of it. He was the one that was boots on the ground down there taking all the footage. And then somebody put it together in terms of a final cut. And I knew that if they didn't find any bodies, that they were going to pivot to the wives. So, and I had always heard Lucy telling me that she was absolutely 100% convinced that he had killed her mother and then the stepmother or the girls that her stepsisters that they had on the show. And it seemed to me, especially one with the rifle, the long rifle, mm-hmm. I'm like, that just didn't sound right. You know, like, and I know that they had that medical examiner or that forensic pathologist on that was saying, you know, it's that's a misnomer about women not using handguns to kill themselves.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, it's really still the number one way that they do it, but to do it with a shotgun,
the physicality of it looked nearly impossible.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. Cause you know, to think that none of the buckshot,
I thought it was a 22, wasn't a shotgun.
Oh, so it wasn't. So it was a 22, but
22.
I think that the bullet wouldn't have gone through and through, because we didn't get to that part of the autopsy. I don't know if the bullet made it.
I don't know if it went through either. But again, it's an unusual weapon to use for an unaliving, especially unusual caliber, unusual weapon. I mean, it's just so if you're going by weapon of choice, that is typically not the one used.
100%. I mean, I kind of wrote that off to being, you know, you can't pick your poison at that point. Like, if she was that desperate to do it, and that was what was handy, you know, and she just grabbed Don's gun and left, then I could see that being feasible in terms of just kind of the logistics of it, though. It didn't make any sense. And there were so many questions I had.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, obviously, I'm sitting there watching this cop talking about that there were no footprints, and then you got another cop saying that it hadn't even snowed yet.
Right.
You know, so that's some incongruence to where I'm like, okay,
yeah,
who's shitting the bed here? Or did they just assume because it was the 70s and, you know, Don seemed normal, you know, and then you're looking back in today's day and age, and you're kind of looking through the police report, and you're like, wow. Is this how they did this shit back in the 70s in terms of domestic violence or potential domestic violence? They just gave a tip of the hat to the husband.
And it's an interesting word, too. The word, and also that word normal. Normal is always dependent on the context in which you're living, as well as with the individual. Because normal, I'm imagining what they thought normal for Don was, and that is non-emotional. Yeah, because he's psychopathic.
Right. Yeah, or
just full of rage. I mean, you have two emotions, nothing and rage.
Well, go ahead, T.
I also want to play the devil's advocate here a little bit, but I don't know if it's even that. But here's another reality of this psychologically, and I do think he did this to a lot of the women. But the reality is also this. Maybe there's a mix going on. He targeted women. He married women who were not in good places mentally. These are not healthy people. And it's not a disparagement on these women at all. This is just the fact of what it was. They weren't in good places mentally. And if you are consistently, coercively abusing them mentally for years, you could drive someone to go and self-delete themselves. I saw that as an interesting term.
I like that, self-delete.
Yeah, I saw one of our listeners said that. I mean, you could do that. It happens a lot. I mean, I'm thinking of the J.P. Miller case. You know, I mean, that's allegedly, in my opinion, I think that's what happened there. I don't think he actually did anything to his wife or ex or soon to be. I think she was driven to it, and that's what's being litigated. There's a lot of cases like that where you drive someone so nuts, essentially, and they see no way out through that control, that this is the best method for them. And I'm wondering if some of Don's wives may have done that, may have been pushed that far by him through his control, through his abuse. And then it was, well, see, I didn't do it. They did it to themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering how much of that is part of this story. I mean, it's just as bad as if he did pull the trigger, because in a even worse way, he did by literally convincing someone that that's the way that they need to go.
Yeah, I think that's 100%. I think it's more than just like a factor. I think that was it.
Yeah.
Like that was the answer, because the like not Lucy's mother, but the other woman, I think, was Christine. You know, she had secured her own place, right? Mm-hmm. So she had finally made a move to get out of there. And, you know, as soon as she's preparing to kind of move herself into this place and on with her life. But that tracks too. That tracks from Don's perspective as a narcissist psychopath.
Control. You know, like, when you lose control, your rage spikes.
100%.
And the other thing he was doing, you know, kind of, because I know when you're dealing with that many murders, you're thinking serial killer kind of stuff. But this is kind of different, because this from what we've seen from the data points of people, he was using them as like surrogate mothers, housekeepers. I mean, he was using them as an old rusty tool that he finally threw away. And the way he threw them away was unaliving them.
Right.
So it was kind of a different dynamic as well, in that he's just. But the psychopathy, you know, again, who knows, because you're not a licensed clinician, but, you know, the psychopathy that is evident, especially when his sister came on the end. I thought that was really, really telling about how she described his behavior growing up and throughout his entire life. And because you saw her behavior. I mean, she's like a carbon copy of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She really is.
The apples fell from the same tree.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Yeah,
I thought the sister was very compelling.
Yeah, me too.
Because I knew that they had spoken to her, and I knew the story, because when Lucy first told me about Don's sister, you know, because I vetted everything. She would tell me something, I'd write it down during our conversations, and then I'd go vet it to see if it was accurate. And then, you know, when she told me about the sister, you know, trying to kill her boyfriend with a fucking claw hammer, man, I'm like, holy shit. I mean, that's a thing. I mean, like trying to bury the claw end of a hammer into somebody's skull is a thing, you know, and it really, it makes everything else seem that much more believable in terms of just this family was.
And then when you met her on camera after the story, you're like, oh yeah. You're like, oh yeah, I can see it.
Oh yeah. 100%. You know, cause like, and she essentially threw him under the bus completely. Yeah. with the one homicide that she claims, that when she sees the guy who R'd her, you know, outside that bar or at the gas station, wherever she said she saw him, and she, you know, Don like sees her go white and is like, what's wrong? And he's like, I think that's one of the guys that, or I know that's one of the guys that R'd me. And then he's like, are you sure? Are you 100% sure? And then proceeds to go and end that guy's life. You know, he's like, well,
and with nothing to lose, because she's on parole and she died 2 months later. I mean, so why lie?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had no reason to lie about it.
And she hates Lucy.
Right. And she hates Lucy. And she was protective of the family name initially, you know, and for whatever reason, she ended up, you know, kind of caving at some point. And you kind of had that same thing with Susan. I mean, if you go all the way to the last episode and he's interviewing Susan, you know, I mean, I don't know, you know, and he asks her the question, like, if any of that, what your sister is saying happened, if any of that's true, you know, where would he have put the bodies?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she says, in the wells, you know, so it's like, It's fascinating psychologically, the whole thing, in terms of just the massive amount of damage. And then you've got kind of the third sister who never made it on screen, who's just kind of sitting silent. And you have Susan saying that she's basically backing her side. And I had Lucy telling me that she was backing her side. And I'm curious to know, you know, what the response would be kind of with them uncovering what they did about the wives, you know, or it seems to me to be pretty evident that neither of these women unalive themselves.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's just, it doesn't track for me. That
I feel like too. So much of the doc
and I'm not blaming these people. They have their lives. They've a lot of, you know, they've moved on. Don's dead. They're trying to find peace. They're trying to go forth in this world and live a life. And to me, what I saw a lot of it was everybody trying to protect their own bubble. Again, I'm not saying it's wrong. I mean, I'd be protecting my bubble too, if that's where I came from. When somebody's trying to poke into it going, hey, did you think of this? Did you think about this part and that part? And it's far darker than even you already know how damn dark it is. Yeah, I wouldn't want to go down that road either. So I get where they're coming from. It doesn't necessarily lead to the truth, but there's a lot of self-protection action that's going on here with the daughters, the sister, everybody. Everybody has their own motivations for not digging deeper into Don, it seems. Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. There is more to come as we continue to talk about this. Paramount Plus is where you can watch the doc, My Killer Father, The Green Hollow Killer. It is available right now. It's a three-part documentary that reportedly promises new witnesses and previously unreported evidence in the case against Don Studi. The filmmakers say they spent over 3 years and reportedly hundreds of thousands of dollars investigating. Charlotte Studi's death has been reclassified. Witnesses have allegedly come forward, including someone described as an accomplice who reportedly kept the secret for years, and still no human remains have been conclusively recovered from that Iowa hillside. I want to talk about that. The documentary and the testimony from someone describing themselves as an accomplice who allegedly kept the secret for years about what happened in Green Hollow. Bobby, if that is real, if this person is true to what they're saying, if someone is on camera saying they were involved or witnessed what Don Studi allegedly did, what does it take for that to move from a streaming show and do an actual active investigation when you have a living soul saying, yeah, I was there, I helped?
It depends, because he dipped. You know, like, he started with carrying the body, and it sounds like they walked past the trailer, and there was a way to get up. Like, so the way that you would get up to kind of the entrance on the bluff up there was to walk past that trailer. Cause that's why I was saying, like, I made the mistake of climbing up this kind of rock wall. And it was really just dirt, and it was, you know, 15, 17 feet high. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know at that time, because I just couldn't get the lay of the land from my perspective, from where I was looking and trying to figure out ways to get up to where I was going or wanted to get to. So if he was walking past the trailer and Don had him carrying the body, if it's on the Studi land, because ultimately, T, it's gonna boil down to a search warrant. You know, I mean, that's ultimately what it is. You're either getting consent to search, which Sean Smith gave, but if it's a body that's buried on the what was the Studi property that's now in a land trust, it's a different story there. Mm-hmm. Unless you're getting consent, you have to go in and get a warrant. Do I think that with this guy putting an affidavit together and saying this is what happened? And again, theoretically, he has no reason to lie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I know for a fact that people that they interviewed for the Paramount Plus documentary were not getting paid. Like, that's not how they operate in these things. You know, Sean Smith, he got into a contract, but that was a location agreement. You know what I mean? That was literally, we're coming to dig up your land. We'll repair it the best we can, but we're going to pay you some money to be able to do it. That's a different thing. Like, they're a documentary. It's unethical for them to pay people that they're interviewing, because then there's a conflict there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're paying that person. So that changes the dynamic of what's supposed to be a documentary fly on the wall type thing. So, I mean, ultimately, I think that guy would probably, I'd like to see the feds or the local sheriff or somebody say, all right, you know, I want to connect you to a lie box and let's go through a polygraph just to see if I can at least determine if you're being truthful about what you're saying happened. You know, because it's strange. Like, I could see that guy keeping quiet in that particular area, because it's a very small town. Even when you get to Council Bluff and even Omaha, like I tried that Garcia case, and I lived out in Omaha for 3 months, and it's a small town, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's big, but it's a small town. It's like you get the sense that people really know everybody that lives in that town for the most part. So
it is. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say it's a closed off community, but people who are there, most of them have been there their whole lives. And if you're an outsider coming in, you will probably always be an outsider coming in, no matter how long you've been there. Having kind of lived in that general area, still kind of in that general area of the country, Wichita's like that, Omaha's like, they're all kind of having that vibe.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
No, go, Robin.
No, I was curious. So let's do the hypothetical here where, all right, so law enforcement finds it compelling enough to get a search warrant. And they go in there, and by happen chance, even though it's a huge property to search, but they actually find a body. Can this guy be charged?
I mean, isn't an accomplice after the fact? I mean, yeah. He certainly didn't have anything to do with the homicide itself.
Right, I know, but can he be accomplice?
I mean, theoretically, if the statute of limitations hasn't run on it, which I think it might have, you know, I mean, there's no statute on murder.
Yeah, but if it was that murder he's being charged with,
right. If this is like 30 years ago, then I don't think. Yeah. And plus, if he's come forward and he's being helpful, like he's not really the bad guy, you know, mm-hmm. to the extent where, and he's only of certain utility because he didn't really find out where the final resting place would have been. Because mm-hmm. that's what I was saying. Like if you walk past Studi's trailer, that's where the road kind of like you make a turn and then you head up. This kind of like carved out road that they had made so that you can get up on the bluff area. So like he may have been just heading up to where he usually was dumping the bodies on Smith's land. So, you know, you're still dealing with the same issue, you know, and that's the thing that just drives me nuts because Sean Smith was telling me, I'm like, there has to be some kind of record of where they were digging these wells. You know, I mean, I'm like, are you aware of anything? He's like, well, back in, I think he said in the 20s that they had built a bunch of track housing, like put up kind of like trailers for homeless people or low income people that they were kind of putting out there as low income housing. And he said that he said that those are mapped. And that each one of those particular trailers had their own wells. So he says that he thinks that we would be able to find where those particular wells were located from actually going to, you know, the land record department down there and pulling whatever paper they had on those places. So that was something that I was interested in doing. But in terms of kind of the rest of the wells that would have been dug by Sean's family over the decades, I don't necessarily know that that's true because, you know, I mean, Sean tells me he used the word hundreds, that there were just a ton of wells out there.
Yeah.
You know, and then ultimately, like I was saying last week, his cows were of, you know, great importance to him in terms of not wanting those cows to fall into those wells.
Right,
makes a lot of sense. And at that time, they're not thinking anything about it. They're simply just filling up the wells and they're moving on. And over time, grass grows over it. So it's like, and you get a pretty good scope because they did enough drone work in that documentary to understand just how big this piece of property was. And what the terrain is like.
And how it's changed over 30 years that she can't recognize as well. So
the flood, Robin.
Yeah.
The flood was a game changer in terms of the topography of that land. Yeah. It looks completely different.
And where's the motivation too? Because that's, I still think that's the greatest challenge here is there's no families coming forth crying foul. Where's, you know, help find our family members.
It's you and
Lucy.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder about that here. I mean, and I'm wondering if it's something where there's families out there that don't know that this is a lever to pull right now. That people
that's
are
connected,
here,
right?
Yeah, that people are looking. Obviously, you know, I mean, the end game here for everybody is a little bit different. Giving families back the missing woman, giving her name back, what happened to her, the truth of what happened. That's the end game for some. For Lucy, it's being validated in her story. Everybody has a bit of a different endgame here. But if there's families out there who spent decades wondering what happened to someone they loved, a daughter, a sister, a mother who disappeared near Omaha in the 70s or 80s and never came home, and they're watching the documentary right now, or they're watching us on YouTube right now and going, huh,
this is it.
I got somebody who went missing around that time. Yes. Where do they go with that, Bob? What should they be doing? Because I think maybe that's part of the hidden lever here in getting more utility here to dig where it needs to be dug, you know, physically and metaphorically, is the demand from people saying, I have a loved one who died in this or went missing in this area at this time period. Can we take another look? What should somebody do if they're having that moment?
Well, I think first they could call law enforcement, and they should just to say, like, if for whatever reason they didn't initially report their loved one missing, which does happen from time to time.
Sure.
You know, I don't think that that's like it's something that is not a common occurrence because for various reasons. I mean, if you've lost track of your kid because they've just become a wayward soul and you don't know where the hell they are. And I just assume that they were an addict and they died that way. You know, maybe you don't report them missing, but if you have anybody that went missing in that area, I would start with law enforcement and then reach out to me, reach out to Tony, you know, like if you can reach out to us, I fully intend, because I know for a fact, because while I was in Jazz Fest, Sean Smith was texting with me, and Lucy is not giving up. Now, I know that there's no intent on making a second season of this. I don't think it got re-upped by Paramount, which means that money's dried up in terms of the funds that they had to help. But Lucy is still very much wanting to get on the land. Like, she's just obsessed with finding these bodies. And again, like, to me, that will speak volumes, because the way she kind of worked around me and didn't tell me that she was working with Paul really kind of upset me in a way. And it's not because I gave a shit about exclusivity at all. But what bothered me is she was like, I only trust a very small circle of people. And it's the guy, Eric, who was on the thing from Newsweek. And then it became me, you know, and I was telling her, I was like, look, I said flat out, you know, I want to cover the story, but more importantly, I want to help you find these people.
Yeah.
Well, that's what my driving goal is, you know, whereas with Newsweek and a documentary filmmaker, they're looking to get views, you know, when they're getting a contract from Paramount is, you know, when they pitched that, it couldn't have been, we're definitely going to find the bodies. You know, I run up against the same thing all the time with my second Gacy season, where I'm trying to find additional victims and I kept pitching it to different streamers. And it was like, they all wanted I need a guarantee. This isn't, you know, Geraldo Rivera and Al Capone vault shit, man. Yeah. Where, you know, and I'm like,
right,
I don't give a shit if they found it or not with Al Capone's vault. If it was a dusty wine bottle, what you cared about was the ratings, and you got huge ratings on it. So even though it was a disappointment at the end, it still doesn't change the fact. So I think Paul was able to sell it to Paramount based on that. And he was also able to make the pivot regarding the wives. You know, it's like, well,
right,
we don't find the bodies, we're going to pivot to the wives, and it's still a fascinating story. So, but you know, I would suggest that anybody out there that's watching that to first reach out to local law enforcement and then to creators such as myself and Tony and Robin. We'd love to hear from you, and we will help you, you know, get the word to who it needs to get to. And again, if I can repair the relationship with Lucy, and that's part of the story that I didn't tell yet either. And it's that when Sean Smith did his own dig, you know, this was after Lucy had put him on blast on shows, so like him and his wife on social media, just saying the worst shit imaginable for two people that are pretty much beloved in that area. Like,
it looked like they're trying to help very genuinely.
They were. I mean, I can tell you, knowing Sean, that, and I kept telling Lucy this, I'm like, if your father is who you say he is, why are you believing a damn word that he's saying to you in terms of never trust a Smith? It's, you know what I mean?
Right, right. Like, yeah, like completely I'm having incongruent.
A conversation with Sean Smith and Trey, his wife, and I'm like, look, these are good people. Like, this guy actually believes you. Quit shitting on them.
Yeah.
You know, let them protect their rights in this thing because they don't want these people coming in that they don't know from a hole in the ground, tearing up their land, using their names in a false light, doing whatever the fuck they might do that documentary filmmakers are sometimes prone to do in terms of fictionalizing the aspects of it, you know, to just kind of beef up the storyline. And, you know, like I guarantee you Sean's not real happy about the fact that, you know, they put in there the shit with Lucy saying that their family was like, you know, they were weed dealers and growing weed. Like,
sure.
Sean was always at him. He's like, nah, man. He's like, my dad was like the last dude. These are farmers, like literal just Iowa farmers.
Cows.
You know, that's all they were. And so it was like that whole thing where Lucy was attacking them, that became my challenge. And when they were talking about, oh, we negotiated with the landowner to get on. Well, that we was me. Like, that was literally me putting that deal together between Paul and Sean and, you know, to get them on the land because I wanted to see this through, you know. And ultimately, when I found out that Lucy had this relationship with Sean and with Paul and hadn't told me about it, that sent up the first red flag that this woman's really capable of lying without batting an eye.
Yeah.
Like that was the first time that I had felt like, wow, like she's been telling me for 6 months, she's not talking to anybody else. And not only is she talking to somebody else, she calls me up and she says, oh, I've been working with this documentary film guy and he's coming to Iowa. And I'm like, you know, I was really, I was put off.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean, you want to be, you're being up and up with her and she's not being up and up with you.
But of course she is though. I mean, she's been lying her entire life for survival. I mean,
she's letting her own neuroses destroy her essentially in my
opinion. Yeah. But I really think that hopefully we're onto something here because the energy that can come that this needs is actually coming from victims' families. And so, I mean, so if we start getting some people, here's the hope and prayer on this is that you get some people and you can actually start seeing a pattern then of a location of where these reports are from, you know, that could actually hopefully give enough energy to people who want to fund something like this to actually go in again. Lucy's behavior doesn't surprise me. I can tell you guys
100% that when I was down there and I was dead adamant, this is before Paul Lima was even in existence in terms of being a part of it. When I was down there for the initial dig with the feds and they came up and said, well, we didn't find anything. I had so many people from that area that were willing to donate money and or machinery and or time to help with it. I know for a fact, if people start coming out of the woodwork, if this gets people that had people gone missing, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and they're like, wow, like I think this thing might be my answer, then reach out. And I'm telling you, either to law enforcement or, as I've said multiple times, to Tony's show, to my show, and we will see to it that we follow through.
Because you could tell from the doc, that's a good community. I mean, the fact that so many people are willing to talk and share openly like that, that's always a good sign. Again, you always see what I call the life arcs of people, and you can also see them from groups, organizations, communities. And so I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was well done.
Check it out. My Killer Father, Green Hollow Killer, Paramount Plus is where that is at. Bob Mata, Tuesdays with Bob, as always. Thank you for being here. Check out Bob's podcast, Defense Diaries, available wherever you get podcasts and also on YouTube. And Bob?
Buried inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation. Thank you, T.
Also, go press subscribe on that. It is a great, great series. Very much worth checking out. So go hit subscribe there. All right. We'll continue our conversation here in the comment section. Substack YouTube is where you can join us there. So please do that. And we will do just that and continue the conversation for Bob.
Hey, don't forget Robin's book.
Nah, we're fine. Yeah. We're fine.
It's not all about me. There we go.
It's all about
available wherever books are sold. Go and check that out. Until next time, for Bob, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.